Thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, we're going to meet Dr. Murray Butner, a new family physician at Bartlett Family Medicine, but not a new physician to Alaska. Also, we learned about Sea Week, a program for students through a partnership with NOAA and the Juno School District with new partner for this year, UAS. And updates from the Juno Commission on Aging. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. Bartlett Family Medicine is a primary care clinic located in the Mendenhall Valley and is owned and operated by Bartlett Regional Hospital. It was formerly known, you may have remembered, as Family Practice Physicians. Dr. Murray Butner, with over 30 years of experience, joins the team and was recently at the Ethel Lund Medical Center. Gwyneth Cheesh.
Hello, Boston. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Happy to have you here. Thank you so much. Wasiati, how are you today?
Good. Good, thanks. I'm getting a little sun breaking through down here.
So yeah. Nice. Thank you for taking some time from your patients. I know this is prime physician time. So you have just joined the Bartlett Family Practice like a couple months ago.
Yep. Very end of March. So it's been a
very end of March. Yeah, okay.
Settling in out there.
But you have a long history in Alaska.
It's getting longer. Yeah, it's that whole age thing. Yeah, I first came up here in '97. I was down in Kluwak. First time I came to Alaska, and the first job I had in Alaska was down in Kluwak, and I definitely quickly fell in love with the region, which I think is a lot of our stories.
Pretty much. That is the story, especially because I think you're originally from the East Coast. You're a New Englander.
Yeah, it's a crazy story because I spent the first 30 years in New England, and I went to medical school in New York City and then started a residency in New York City and honestly thought I was going to stay in the city the rest of my life. And I kid you not, 2 years later, I was living on a float house in Kluwak, 2 miles north of the town, kayaking or taking a little skiff to work every day. It was a major culture shock, but I loved it. And I have not moved back to New York.
were you when you were growing up in New England, were you
suburbs?
Like, outside kind of a guy?
Not nearly. My wife's Alaskan. No, not by any standard she would recognize. No. Very very Connecticut suburbs, outdoors.
So what got you to Kluwak in the first place? Was it a job opportunity?
Yeah, I was down in New Mexico. I worked for a small Indian Health Service hospital outside of Albuquerque, and every single person there, pretty much, especially the people I hung out with, were in the dental department, but everyone there during our breaks or whatever, all they would talk about was their years working in Alaska, working in Bethel, working in Nome, whatever. And so having heard that enthusiasm, when the job ended in New Mexico, there was an opportunity to come work in Alaska. And they flew up to Ketchikan. And believe it or not, it wasn't raining. And then I got on my first float plane and went over to Kluwak. And I will say, when the plane was coming down, I looked out the window and I was like, oh, no, this is too small. There's no way. But then after I stayed the weekend, I was like, yeah, no, I think I can do this. And
And here you are. Yeah. Now, you've been to other places around Alaska as well. You've been in other, Harbor, yeah?
Yep, we were here for 3 years. We got married here. This is back in 2003 during the Folk Festival. We got married here. And then we headed off on a sailboat. The boat, as many do, broke down. We ended up in Cordova for 4 years. And then did some years back on the East Coast after that, then came back to Alaska and ended up out in Dutch Harbor for 4 years, which was very memorable, very magic. And then this opportunity came to come back to Juneau, and we grabbed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great to have you back. So I guess one thing I want to understand is, I know that people may remember the practice as family practice physicians. They merged with Bartlett a couple years ago, and they created Bartlett Family Medicine. But when people hear Bartlett, they usually think of the hospital immediately.
Right.
So can you just tell us a little bit about what the difference is? Because you're not even really located.
No,
right,
yeah,
there.
We're the satellite. We're way out there. It is pretty funny. I don't know a ton of the history. I know that Bartlett now has two, well, they've gotten a little bit into having physician practices. Some of them are specialty. There's Bartlett Orthopedics. I'm sure I'm going to leave some out, but there's Bartlett Orthopedics. The pediatric practice, which just joins Bartlett quite recently, that's Amy Dressel's Glacier Pediatrics down near the high school.
Okay.
And that's just been a couple months that they've been under the Bartlett umbrella. And I think it was September of last year, family medicine out near DMV, out towards Auk Bay, where I am, that became part of Bartlett. So Bartlett's now got some practices, I think that's, I know, and again, I'm probably missing some, but that's...
Well, you've only been there 2 months.
Yes.
They haven't given you the full exam yet about the history and everything like that. But you have like, there's, how many of you are at the family practice?
Well, I think we have five or six doctors and one nurse practitioner. Most of my partners have been there quite a long time, but going way back at the same practice, same building. And then there's myself and Emily Boss have started there more recently. We're both family physicians.
Yeah.
And then Jess Young is a OBGYN who comes down and does women's health for a week every month.
Yeah, Jess was on the show last year at some point when she started doing that, which was very
cool.
And
her husband is an eye doctor.
Oh, wow.
Who comes down also for much-needed services that we don't otherwise have here. I think he injects eyes.
Oh, he does,
and the stuff that people would otherwise have to fly out for.
Okay.
So that's a nice, really nice that they're both coming down. And I think from what I gather, they really love coming down here. I can see Fairbanks Juneau being a kind of a nice balance.
That would be a good balance. Yeah, absolutely. So your primary work at Bartlett Family will be as a main, like a family doctor.
Yep, outpatient family medicine. And as most family medicine is skewed to adult medicine, we definitely take care of kids, but it's, it's fun taking care of kids, but just the way it goes, unless you're delivering babies, your practice tends to age with you and it turns mostly into adult medicine and geriatrics.
Right. And how did you decide that as the sort of primary field for yourself over time?
I'm an extrovert and kind of a generalist. I like a little bit. I like knowing about a lot, how's that go? A little about a lot of things.
Yeah, sure.
And it was pretty obvious early in med school that I wanted to keep my hands in as many things as possible.
Were you like, there's neuros. Oh, but then there's also, and then you just kind of said, well, maybe I'll just do the general practice thing.
Yes, to some degree, yes.
Yeah.
You know, part of it was in New York City, there isn't much anymore. And I thought I was staying in New York City. There isn't much general practice anymore. It's so specialized.
Oh, really?
You know, if your shoulder was bothering you in New York City, you would see an orthopedist and probably have an MRI as your first thing. Like, there is no...
Right.
General
There's no
person.
Going to the doctor and going, hey, what do I do? And
exactly.
They're like, take some ibuprofen.
Exactly. And some people would say that's good. Some people would say it's bad.
Yeah.
But it's fun taking care of it. It's really fun. I think one thing, well, this is probably true of any specialty, but in family medicine, you really do get to know families and you do get to know people.
Right.
And if you're lucky and you stay in the same place for a long time, you really get to know people and their families and their stories. And that is probably the most important thing I would say is, and what I fell in love with in Kluwak and what brings us back is rural Alaska, you have this opportunity to, instead of being part of a big business, you are taking care of a little community. And it actually goes both ways. Like, you're taking care of the community, but they're looking out for you. They're looking out for your family. They're asking you about your kids. And I've been in other models back east, especially in the city, where it's just a giant factory. And they're...
Well, the other thing is, I remember talking to the police department about this and having, when I have officers on, I talk about it. Because a lot of times, officers live in a different city than the place they're tasked to work, right? So you don't... You know, and they do that for a reason, but here that's not possible.
Right.
And I feel like it's the same thing with you. Like, you can run into your doctor at, you know, Foodland or the Super Bear or something. You'd be like, oh, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, and I've always thought that's a good thing. I know I definitely know people who don't like that. It's, you know, I have friends who are ER doctors in Anchorage and stuff like that, and they don't like it. But it's actually a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And again, it's what I said. Like, they're actually invested in you and your family.
Yeah.
You don't need to keep them at arm's length, because then you won't, you know, get close to them. So
I have a funny story. I was at dinner one night at a restaurant downtown, and I saw this woman across from me, and I was like, she was at a different table, and I was like, I think I know that person, but I couldn't figure out who it was. It was my dental hygienist.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I just put out of place,
out
of context. I couldn't place her right away.
That out of context thing is wild.
Yeah.
Like, I think I wouldn't recognize my own mother in some context.
Right. Because
you're like, this woman looks very familiar to me.
Who is this?
She had an important part of my life, but I just can't put my finger on it.
Yeah.
Mom, what are you doing here?
Yeah, so it's just interesting. But I do think that brings, like, I mean, I think that's part of the small town sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you're able to sort of get to know your patients a little more. You might run into people out when you're out and about.
Yep.
And the long-term care that you're talking about, that you get to see people over, you know, many, many years. Are people now remembering when you were here before and coming back to
you? Yeah, I've got a little bit of that. That's been fun. It has been also maybe more coworkers than former patients. But yeah, it really is fun when people remember you and when you remember them. It's super
fun. Absolutely.
I've been reminiscing. Well, you and I talked a little bit about Dutch Harbor, and I just ran into someone. I've ran into two people this week who we remembered each other from Dutch Harbor, or, you know, it's just neat.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, that small Alaska thing that everyone always talks about.
Yeah, it's great. It's a nice little small world. Sometimes you don't want to be seen when you're out and about, but then, you know, other times it's not a big deal. And it's really nice when you get to see people that you're interfacing with and not on the daily, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
Yep.
So you're accepting new patients now.
Yep, trying to build the practice. Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
And you're thinking you're going to be in Juneau for a while?
We are done. We hope we are done moving. You know, we're almost at the empty nest. Our son's finishing up high school next year, and we both, Jen and I, really love being here.
And what is your wife do?
She is a midwife, but doesn't deliver babies anymore. She works for the state of Alaska, Department of Public Health, Women and Maternal Child Health Program.
Okay.
It's lot of education and grant management, program management, doula programs, breastfeeding programs, maternal mortality, a lot of really important stuff.
So don't go to her for baby delivery.
Go
to her for programs.
But definitely if you were in a pinch and there was a baby delivery. actually, the way I always talk about it, there is no one better. This is true, man. No one better in an emergency than a midwife.
Oh, really?
Because, like, their whole thing is, like, staying calm when everyone else is losing it and getting – what's the other part of my joke? Getting out of a tight situation. There's no one better than a midwife.
Right. That's funny.
It's a great skill set.
And so you're taking new patients, and I know that the you go to bartletthospital.org and you search on their primary care tab under services, and you'll see all the list of doctors out there at Bartlett Family Medicine, including Jess Young, who we were mentioning, and a few other folks. There's another thing that I wanted to bring up with you, which is that this note that I have here about being a certified medical examiner for commercial motor vehicle drivers.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, well, I did a lot of this out in Dutch Harbor. There are people who drive commercially, big buses, big trucks, other things, they need to have a CDL. And the CDL, they have to have a physical either every year or every other year. And sometimes it can be hard to get those done. Depending, right? And so in Juneau, there's not a huge number of people doing them, and we have a fair number of people who need them, and we do them out there. So we wanted to get that out there and let people know.
Oh, sure. Because, I mean, we have everybody driving all the tour buses and stuff like that, so that's kind of cool.
Last year, I was walking near the Salmon Bake, and there were these, you know, two full buses for the Salmon Bake, and one was coming out of that little driveway, and one was going in, and the two drivers, you know, one had to back up, and the other one, and they did it so fast, so professionally. It was like someone driving a forklift or something. And I looked up, and I don't think either of them were 18. Like they were two young people who have learned how to boss a commercial bus around.
There you go. That's pretty cool.
It was awesome.
So before I let you go, Murray, what would be one tip for my general health that you might give us today?
Try to be as active as you can. Get outside. Get some sun. I know sun is a challenge here, but I think that getting outdoors. We, as you know, Boston, I'm not picking on you, but we spend most of our lives looking at a screen 18 inches away from us, and that's not what we evolved to do.
We need that vitamin D for sure.
And just moving our bodies. And
getting moving.
Yeah.
Okay, so get moving, everybody. And you can call the clinic 907-789-2910.
And you'll get Shirley, who's been there for a long, long time.
Awesome. And you can schedule an appointment with Dr. Butner, who is now taking new patients. Welcome back to Juno. We really appreciate you being in our town.
Thanks for having me down in Boston.
It's fun
to be in here.
Yeah, absolutely. Come back anytime. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to take a listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
Across the country, climate change has increased the destructive potential of wildfires. That's why the Washoe Tribe of Nevada and California is working to reintroduce intentional cultural fire meant to restore forest health and reduce explosive fires. In this encore episode, the Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Bradle has more.
It's a sun-splashed afternoon in a forest near South Lake Tahoe, where large fir and pine trees stretch into the clear blue sky. Here, there are dozens of tribal members eager to learn about cultural burning. But first, they have to learn how to control and put out fires. That's why a group is huddled around a heavy-duty water pump with two thick fire hoses connected to it. One is in a tub of water, the size of an above-ground pool, and the other is unraveled a few dozen yards away. Jeremy Miles Placencia is with the U.S. Forest Service and leading the demonstration.
We have everything connected. We have our discharge hose. Now we can set up the fuel line.
And then he revs up the water pump. Water pushes through the extended hose like a snake coming to life. Now participants can practice spraying pressurized water as if they were putting out a fire. One person soaking up that knowledge is 30-year-old Kyle Tabor Cooper. He's a member of the Nooksack tribe in Washington State, but lives in northern Nevada and is engaged to a member of the Washoe tribe.
I've met a lot of people that have inspired me to like get into this training and just show me like a different kind of way, like with cultural intentional fire.
Cultural fires are restorative, not destructive. They're typically done on a smaller scale to take care of traditional medicine plants or other cultural resources that rely on fire.
So for example, the Washoe tribe, our first two burns were burning a willow patch.
That's Rihanna Jones, the director of the Washoe tribe's Environmental Protection Department.
Washoes are famous for their baskets, making beautiful baskets. So when you burn the willows, they grow back better, straighter, with less secondary nodes.
But the Washoe tribe wasn't allowed to burn for more than a century. That's because of longtime colonial federal policies that prioritize suppression or putting out fires as soon as they start. Jones says that has hurt tribes and the health of many forests.
Fire suppression is like indigenous culture and indigenous people suppression as well. They were not interested in, I think, learning from indigenous people.
But that has started to change over the last decade. Now, many federal fire officials say decades of keeping fire off the land caused a buildup of highly flammable dead trees and brush, turning many forests into a tinderbox. And rising temperatures and drier conditions are adding even more fuel. A 2021 study led by UCLA found that climate change has been the main driver of the increase of fire weather in the West.
Climate change has had a huge effect with respect to drought, increase of pests and pathogens, and then increase of wildfire. So we're having these catastrophic huge wildfires coming through that we can't keep up with.
Global nonprofit The Nature Conservancy has worked with tribes to help restore that balance. The group brings together trained burn bosses and indigenous fire practitioners to work and learn side by side. Brandon Cobb is Cherokee and a program manager with the conservation group, which was here at this training.
A lot of what we're doing here is trying to return to that different style of fire that allows us to actually promote our ecosystems, promote our cultures.
He says that's why it's important that younger generations become educated and trained on stewarding their homelands.
As indigenous people, it took almost 500 years to nearly eradicate us. And in order to rebuild to what we once were, it will take at least 500 years.
Back near the water pump, Tabor Cooper is motivated to be a part of that change.
I feel like there's a lot of purpose in this kind of line of work.
Through this hands-on training, Tabor Cooper gained qualifications to fight fires with federal and state agencies and the Washoe tribe, and work on cultural burns with tribal members. He's already gotten a taste of what it's like. He recently observed a cultural burn in a meadow to restore medicinal plants like elderberries, an experience that inspired him even more.
The possibilities and like the opportunity and like what the future holds like seems so much brighter. Introducing a relationship with fire that isn't just bad.
Tabor Cooper says he's excited to carve out a career in fire and pass that knowledge down to future generations. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Caleb Radel.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Jill Freitas for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Kindergarten and sixth grade students in Juno have been visiting tide pools and Alaska's largest fisheries science facilities during Sea Week, thanks to a partnership between the University of Alaska Southeast, the Juneau School District, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA. Easy to say. Even though the name has week in the title, it's a two-month venture for these kids, which begins its wrapping it up this week, which is really kind of cool. And joining me now to share more about this awesome program, I have Story Oates, who's the Career Services Manager out at the University of Alaska Southeast. How are you today, Story?
Good. Good to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. I also have Ibet Sidden, who's the Fisheries Research Biologist, or a fishery. You're not the only one. You're a Fisheries Research Biologist with NOAA Fisheries. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Excellent. And then I also have Kristen Garreau from the Juneau School District in the house, and also a short timer from what I hear.
That's right. Retirement's coming up soon.
Is it happening like now?
It's happening in a month at the end of June.
At the end of June.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You've had a long career at the Juneau School District. So thank you for all your service that you've done. And it must be nice to go out on a high with the Sea Week.
Exactly.
Yeah. So who wants to tell me, like, I outlined it a little bit, but where do we start with this? Do we want to start with, who wants to start and tell me what Sea Week really does?
Well, I can start and fill in. And NOAA is just a piece of it. There's other community partners that offer different programming to the different grades.
Okay.
But at the NOAA Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute, we have historically focused on programming for kindergartners and sixth graders.
Okay.
So we welcome every kinder and sixth grader across the district, including homeschool programs and every student in Juneau who wants to come.
And what do they get to do?
So we've had some great one of the biggest things people are always really surprised at is just our aquarium.
Yeah.
We have one of the best aquaria in Juneau. It's open to the public in our lobby. But we're also really far out the road, so a lot of people haven't always been out there.
Made the journey.
Yeah.
How big is this this aquarium?
Ooh, good question. Big. Not quite as big as Dipax.
Okay.
And then we also have some touch tanks that are also in the lobby and publicly available. So both kinders and sixth grade students will do some sort of scavenger hunt activities at the aquarium and at the touch tanks, and really just like welcoming kids to actually touch the animals in the sea in the touch tanks. And
yeah. There's all different kinds of varieties of sea life that are in these tanks and touch tanks.
Yeah. I mean, most of your typical, what would you think of as intertidal animals in the touch tanks, right? Your sea stars and sea cucumbers and crabs. And and then in the tanks, a whole bunch of variety of different fishes.
No sharks? Is there sharks in there?
There's no sharks.
No. Maybe a baby.
I mean, there's sharks in Alaska.
Yeah.
But there's no sharks in our tank.
In the tank. Okay.
But we do have wolf eels and herring.
Nice.
A lot of rockfishes.
So a lot of variety that people would get to see and the kids get to learn about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool. So Kristen, maybe, because I know this is for kindergarten and sixth graders, tell me a little bit about, I know this program is, it's like been around a while.
Yeah, you might have had folks on a few years ago when they were celebrating the 50th anniversary of CV.
50th
so anniversary. So it's been over 50 years now that we've been doing this work to get kids out and experiencing the marine life that's right here in our neighborhood. And part of what happens is they get to go to the things like the first and the sixth grade kindergartners and sixth graders go to NOAA and have that experience. And then they get to go to the beach and have a beach day experience where they might see some of the same things if they get there at the right time, if the tides happen to be the right, in the right conditions for them to be able to see some of that stuff. And so it's a great way to help connect them, learn a little bit, and then go and explore their world and be able to do that into the future.
That's amazing. Yeah, I know one of our next guests, Linda, who's in the waiting room in there, was like, I did Sea Week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, that's amazing. So there's probably a lot of people in Juneau who remember doing Sea Week. Was it always kindergartners and sixth graders?
It's always been elementary school kids.
Okay.
So we have what's nice is this bookend of the kindergartners and the sixth graders have experiences that mirror each other in some ways.
Yeah.
And then in between, the second graders to go out with Discovery Southeast or might visit the planetarium and see a planetarium show that's connected to the oceans in other grade levels. And so there's an activity for every grade that's designed to give them some education. And then every grade has the opportunity for a beach day.
I wonder if the sixth graders, obviously, they must remember. They go, I remember when I was here in kindergarten. Do you get that, Yvette?
We get it from the parent volunteers who join their kids' field trips.
Yeah.
I remember coming out here as a kid. Yeah.
Right.
Which has been really cool about having Story involved this year, because she was able to get some of our UAS students that had also participated as kids, and they're helping this year as interns. So that's a pretty awesome culmination.
Yeah, this is a great transition to this new piece of Sea Week, which is that UAS has gotten involved, and you're having internships available for UAS students to be part of Sea Week. Tell me how you got involved and what this program is, Story.
Yeah, so so while I was working at NOAA, I was coordinating Sea Week, and then once I stepped over to UAS, we were trying to, all of us got together to think, how do we keep Sea Week going the way it's been? And, you know, we just started brainstorming, and an idea that came up was, what instead of, you know, an adult getting contracted to do Sea Week and coordinate, what if we now offer this as an opportunity for students to get involved and to intern? So one, they, you know, get to expand on their resume, right, their experience, but they get the experience of working at NOAA, partnering with the school district, getting to know what it's like on the back end of Sea Week and how to coordinate such a large event, right? Because we have over 1,200 students, educators, parents, volunteers involved. It really is a big community event. And so this was an opportunity for the students to step in and take on some of that responsibility. And it was great because we had two students, one Ruby Kresge, who helped me last year with Sea Week. She interned with me when I was at NOAA. She just graduated this year from UAS, and she's going into marine science. And she came back to do the main coordinating, so working with teachers and and scientists and Yvette over at NOAA to get everything coordinated, so all the signups done. And then we had another student, Chelsea Ligsay, who was a C-Week kid. She remembers C-Week as a kindergartner, as a sixth grader. She's currently at UAS studying marine biology and was really excited for this opportunity to now step in as an adult, helping students and offering that opportunity for the littles to, you know, have that experience like she did.
That's very cool. And is the program open to any student at UAS who wants to be involved in it? Or are you looking for like people who are studying like marine biology and things like that?
You know, having a marine biology background is a bonus. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that, you know, it's not open. We do open it up to everyone. I mean, we have, you know, our education, School of Education. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for, you know, students to get a feel for what it's like to do informal education.
Sure.
And so, you know, we're going to be hopefully this year, we threw everything together really quickly. this year, hopefully next year, we're going to have a little bit more time to do more outreach and, you know, have applications that are open up a little longer. So, you know, we can get that out to folks. But
so you feel like it was a success and you want to continue to have the interns as part of this?
Very much so. Yeah. And the great thing was is that when we opened it up to UAS, we had not, you know, our the students that were coordinating, but we are also opening that up to students, you know, from any discipline to come and volunteer. So they got experience to come out to NOAA and volunteer. I mean, even Aparna, our chancellor, came and helped out at the touch tanks. it was amazing.
That's awesome. And Ebit, I'm wondering, like, in terms of the inspiration that the kids get by seeing the aquarium or the touch tank or just getting to meet people like yourself who are like, you know, research specialists and does it open up like a, do you think it opens their mind to the possibilities of those kinds of jobs being something they would want to do?
I mean, that is certainly something we would hope for. What I'm always sort of encouraged by is the motivation both directions. Like, it is equally motivating for us as the scientists who do this work all the time to welcome those kids in the building and see their eyes light up. Like, it's a great reminder to us. We started with those, right, little bits of our eyes opening and being excited, and then we get stuck sometimes in the day-to-day. So it's such a great month to have these classes and kids coming through and have that energy in the building.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be kind of cool. Kristen, do you get feedback from the students on C-Week? And because it sounds like it's not just for, like you said, there's something for every grade in elementary school. So it's like a continuing thing that they get exposed to as residents of our little community here in terms of where they live, which is really kind of cool. But do you get feedback from them?
Yeah, we get feedback from them. We get feedback from teachers that they really love these kinds of activities that get them out and get them connected, like you said, with adults who have these interesting jobs and do these interesting things and just get to explore. Oftentimes, for some of the grade levels, they get to go to places that are near their school so they can walk to someplace that's close by and have an experience that opens their eyes to something new that then they can explore. It's their backyard. It's their neighborhood, you know, that they live in. And so they learn more about where they live and how to interact with their environment.
So if I'm past sixth grade, I guess I could make my own C-Week happen by going out to NOAA, right? And like see the aquarium and the touch tanks. I may not have the same interactions with some of the specialists out there, but
a scientist might walk through the lobby.
Maybe, right? And you'd be like, hey, you. But I think it's so great because, as you were saying, Ebet, I think it's really fun when you see that light in the child's eyes of sort of exploration, discovery, and that sometimes in our, you know, adult bitter lives, the day-to-day kind of, you know, gets to us. But then you remember, oh, yeah, there is something exciting about this work that we do and also the place where we live and exposing the kids to that. I think that's just really cool.
And we have middle school kids who still do beach days and go out and explore and build on those skills with their science teachers in middle school. And then at the high school level, we have students who take marine biology classes and build on those as well. So it doesn't end in sixth grade. It continues, just in a slightly different format.
Right, absolutely. And for you, Story, I'm just curious, like, was the evolution of this intern program, was it to, like, have students kind of see that this kind of work is possible for them in terms of, like, you were talking about early education? Or, you know, I love the idea of, like, somebody who's maybe studying a little bit of science but also wants to be a teacher. Like, you know, they could mash those two things together a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, also think about science communication. How do you effectively communicate the research that you're doing? I mean, I know I got a crash course when I started teaching high school.
Right.
So it's, you know, and we've had high school students that have interned at NOAA and have helped with Sea Week and other, you know, other events during the summer. And, you know, to have those students, even as high school students, work with the, you know, with the younger students and have that peer-to-peer interaction, you know, it's really important to have that representation. And so when, you know, a kindergartner sees, you know, a high schooler, they can think, wow, I can do that. Look at them. They're young, and I could be that one day, right?
Right.
And so that's really powerful to have that opportunity, and especially to have that for all of our elementary school students, whether they're going to the wetlands, whether they're going to DIPAC, whether they're going to NOAA, or just out on the beach spending the whole day exploring, roasting hot dogs, you know, on the fire. That sticks with you. But yeah, so I think, you know, I think it's great for the students to see, like, this could be an opportunity for me to do this as a job. And it's also just a great way of giving back to the community.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the course of, is it about 2 months or 6 weeks or something? Is it, do you cycle through all of the different, is it one small group going each week, or is a couple groups a week? How does that work in terms of the getting out there to NOAA and stuff and the beach days?
I'll speak to the NOAA side. That is the first 4 weeks.
Okay.
So that started at the right after spring break, end of March. And we do 2 weeks of kinders. So we're welcoming several classes a day.
A day. Okay.
Yep. And then the second 2 weeks of that first month are the sixth graders.
Okay, I see.
And then the tides get great later into April for the low tide beach walks.
I see. Okay. And then it cycles through again. Do, like, the kindergartners do the beach days too?
They do.
And the sixth graders.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so fun. What a
cool
program.
Yeah, this year it just so happened that some of the best beach days were this week, the last week of school. So, which is kind of nice, because there's often kids do go to the beach at the last week of school. And so this was a nice way to have it be a really awesome day to explore that intertidal zone.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Kristen, just as we wrap up here, like, there's no sign up for this. This is just something that happens, right? You don't have to specifically sign your kid up for Sea Week, or do you?
The teachers sign up for times that work for them. We provide them a schedule, and then they can sign up for the times that work for them. But the great thing about all the Sea Week activities is they're structured in a way to help the teacher who maybe has less familiarity and background in marine science and the teacher who has been doing it for a long time and has a lot of experience. So it doesn't matter who your teacher is, you're going to go out and have a great experience at any of those grade level outings and have the chance to learn no matter what class you're in.
That's very cool. And is there a best place for me to learn more about these things, like, in terms of websites? I know there's the NOAA site you can go to, right? NOAA.gov. Is that the main page?
There's probably one for the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, which is what the Ok Bay Labs is part of,
under NOAA
Fisheries.
Okay. And then for UAS?
I think right now, to get more information just about Sea Week, I know Peggy Cohen had a really great blog out there, 50 Years of Sea Week, you can Google. I also, while I was at NOAA, had done an education blog. It's called Currents and Connections. And I did a couple of blog posts about Sea Week and the different activities that were, you know, available for students in Juneau. So you can learn a little bit there.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm hopeful that we can actually get something on the UAS website soon. I'm working on that this summer.
Yeah, that's cool. And because it's all integrated into the curriculum. And I think it's really cool that there's probably parents, and maybe even getting to the point where we're having grandparents who were part of that, and then now they're seeing their kids going through the cool. I mean, that's just awesome.
It's pretty amazing, really, to know that it's been going on for that long.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, thank you so much for telling us about Sea Week and highlighting it for us, Kristen, Story, and Ebat. Thank you so much for coming on Juno Afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We'll be right back with the Juno Commission on Aging.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. You would not let a child smoke a cigarette, but many kids, including some in the U.S., work on farms picking tobacco for those cigarettes. And as a result, they can suffer from green tobacco sickness, a kind of nicotine poisoning. When people pick raw tobacco for hours on end, they can absorb an immense amount of nicotine through their skin, causing symptoms like vomiting and cramps. This is especially dangerous for children,
because they're still developing.
Louis Ziska, a Columbia University health researcher, says climate change could increase the risk of green tobacco sickness. In a recent study, he found that some tobacco-growing regions in Brazil, India, China, and the U.S. could get hotter, wetter, or both as the climate changes. Nicotine is water-soluble, so it's absorbed more easily when tobacco leaves or people's skin are wet with rain or sweat. And sweating can also boost nicotine absorption by increasing blood flow near the skin.
That suggests that the current risk that's posed to tobacco workers will be intensified by climate change.
So Ziska hopes this growing danger leads to policies that keep children out of tobacco fields. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anachaya ha anikak, gunish cheesh.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017.
Wasn't born to walk in nobody else's shoes. Wasn't put here to live a life that I didn't choose. I refuse to shrink to fit all your expectations, and I refuse to accept all your limitations. And I may not be for everybody, but you can be sure that I know my worth. I've been told that I'm a creature of disbelief. Stole a few hearts, but does that make me a lifelong thief? I walk tall 'cause of all them that paved the way. And if you were smart, you would listen to what I got to say. Well, I learned this lesson a long time ago. There are people out there who don't know. I was put on this earth to shine bright and proud. When I leave this life, my star gonna shine bright and loud. You can knock me down, but I'ma make you see. I wasn't made for you, honey. I was made for me.
That right there is a little witty young man live from the red carpet stage here in Studio 2K at KTOO. That's her song, Creature of Disbelief. Really good tune. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and joining me now in the studio for our recurring segment from the Juno Commission on Aging, I welcome Deborah Craig and Linda Kruger. How are you today, Deborah?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having us.
Excellent. And Linda, gonna cheese to you.
Great too. Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah. Cool. So I was just telling you during the break, I went to AARP had an awesome screening, which was free. You didn't even have to be necessarily an AARP member, but anybody could sign up. But it was really cool. We got to see Devil Wears Prada, I think it was a week or so ago.
Yeah.
And they were telling me about this cool initiative of, you know, that AARP has of, you know, representation from older folks in media, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think is really cool. And then, so that was really fun. And that was like the first one of these screenings that they do them all over the country, but that was the first one here in Juneau.
You know, they've been doing them up in the Matsu for years. And I have been trying and trying to get them to come to Juneau, and we finally were successful.
Yay.
And so we got one, and I put in the word that, hey, we need more and bring us more. So we'll be seeing more.
It was full.
Yeah.
It was full.
No, I know it sold out. That's great.
It was a really good time there. Yeah. It was a lot
Terrific.
Of fun.
That's
and of
great.
Course, you know, Meryl Streep is amazing.
So, totally amazing.
Yeah, I'm totally amazing. So how's it going? What's going on? Where are we starting today?
We're starting with Deb.
Deb.
Well, we are starting with Older Americans Month.
Okay.
May is Older Americans Month. And on Monday night, I was thrilled to be at the assembly meeting with Mayor Beth Weldon and the rest of the assembly, where they issued a proclamation to us.
Awesome.
If I may read it.
Yes, please.
Whereas seniors represent 30% of the residents of the city and borough of Juneau and are a growing demographic dedicated to supporting our vibrant community. And whereas seniors contribute to the strength and viability of our community through their wealth of life experience and wisdom, personal volunteerism, dedication to family, and economic contributions. And whereas seniors contribute to making Juneau an age-friendly place, making our community more livable and desirable for people of all ages through intergenerational relationships, community service, civic engagement, and many other activities. And whereas communities benefit when people of all ages, abilities, and backgrounds can participate and live independently, and whereas the city and borough of Juneau honors the contributions of seniors during Older Americans Month and the entire year while supporting this year's theme, Champion Your Health, which focuses on prevention, wellness, and personal responsibility as cornerstones of healthy aging. And Mayor Beth Weldon, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, and the City and Borough Assembly, issued this proclamation designating May 2026 as Older Americans Month. And it was really fun at the assembly meeting because they invited everybody over 65 to come up. And first, I was the only person that jumped up and ran to the front. You know, like, yes, it's Juneau Commission on Aging and AARP.
Yeah.
And then everybody started filtering up. It was really surprising how many people came to the front of the stage and wanted to participate in acknowledging their value to the community.
That's so fantastic. Fantastic. Congratulations on that. And I love the theme, Champion Your Health. We just had Dr. Murray Butner
That's
on
right.
from
That's
Bartlett
great.
Family Medicine.
Good.
And I asked him one piece of advice, and he said, get moving.
Yes.
Get moving. Get your vitamin D. Get your body moving. And you guys have mentioned that many times on the show.
Many,
just
many
get
times.
Get out there, take a walk. And you have activities a lot of the times designed for folks to get together to do it, you know, in the same place at the same time.
And Linda's going to talk about, you know, AARP does so many great things, not just the movie situation, but they did a fraud event recently. And I participated in that. It was amazing. An FBI agent came to town and talked about fraud, which is perpetrated on seniors a lot.
A lot.
And so it was great for us to get that information. And Linda's going to talk about more activities that are coming up. And you know, I think it's important for everybody to think about their personal health. And one of the analogies that came up, actually, I stole this from Linda from an event yesterday where former Mayor Bruce Patello was being honored for all his community service as an elder statesman. But one of the things that she said was, you know, this is like when you're on an airplane and they say, okay, if something happens, put your own mask on first and then you can help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really critically important to consider your own health first, you know, and make sure that you're out there. In fact, it's sunny right now. Everybody turn the radio off and get outside.
No, grab
it's really
your
nice.
Radio and listen to it on your phone.
Grab your radio and listen to it on your phone.
Cato.org/live. You can listen to it right there on your phone.
So Lynn is going to share a ton of activities that AARP is hosting and helping with.
Okay, cool. What do we got?
Are we ready? First I'm going to talk about the event we had yesterday.
Cool.
So it's Elder Americans Month, but yesterday was Senior Recognition Day.
Okay.
And so we took advantage of that to have a celebration, and we celebrated Andrus Award recipient Bruce Spatello, who many of the people in your audience will recognize, a dedicated volunteer in the community who's brought lots of positive community impact and inspired others to take action. The AARP Andrus Award for Community Service is AARP's most prestigious volunteer honor, recognizing individuals who share the spirit of service that was championed by AARP founder Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus by sharing their experience, talent, and skills to make a difference in the lives of those who live in their community. And each year, AARP awards one award. And
for
so this is a
state of Alaska. Yeah.
This is a statewide award that Bruce got. And so we were really excited to be able to present that to Bruce yesterday. And in addition to Bruce's award, we honored two of our longtime Juno AARP volunteers, Sue Nielsen, who's been with AARP for 18 years here in Juno, and Barb Potter, 16 years. And they both take part in the local health fairs in town, and at Valentine's Day, there are Cupid crew who put together flower arrangements and take them to the Pioneer Home and Wildflower Court and any kind of scene. I think we do about 12 different senior locations around town. And so they're just wonderful volunteers for us. And we also recognize Bartlett Regional Hospital employee Jane Johnson, who works in, she's the Family and Patient Administration Operations Manager at Bartlett. So a lot of us won't run into her, but she works with seniors to help, and others, patients, to help them navigate the complexities of healthcare finance. Mm. And, you know, you go to Bartlett, you get a bill, oh my gosh, what's this for? And there's insurance and all that kind of thing. And so that's what she does. And she does a great job helping people navigate complexities of healthcare finance. And when she was told about the award, she said, "It was incredibly nice for you to think of me. It makes me feel proud that I can contribute."
Aww.
So isn't that wonderful?
That's,
I mean,
so
she's
nice
out there, and she wasn't able to attend because she was working and her supervisor was working, but we honored them even though they were absent.
Yeah, nice.
And so we're hoping to continue this awards in future years and have something that we do every year so that we can recognize seniors in the community who are giving back and contributing to the community. So
That's fantastic.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, sometimes those healthcare bills can be very confusing because you're getting a bill from the hospital, you're getting a bill from the doctor, you might be getting a bill from the lab tech people who run the lab. Like, it gets very confusing. So I love that there's somebody there to help you navigate that, which is very cool.
Navigator, that's a good description.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we did last night. Another thing that's going on, if people aren't aware of it, CBJ has a Safe Streets for All comprehensive safety action plan that they're updating.
Okay.
And this is with federal DOT money, and they may have been on your show and talked about it. It's a DOT grant. And they're looking at all city and state streets, especially the Lemon Creek area, for safety issues. And they're looking at accidents, conditions, trends, injuries, and all kinds of other data. And they had a survey out and some open houses through March and April.
Mm-hmm.
But the survey recently closed, and we'll see information coming out on their new safety plan with recommendations. So we want to look at that. But I was explaining to Deb about this yesterday, and I remember last fall I was in a meeting with DOT talking about road safety and the safety, Safe Streets for All, and they commented that seatbelt use in Juno is the worst in the state.
I know. Isn't that an amazing data
We don't even think about – we just automatically put on our seatbelt when we get in the car. Well, I guess a number of Juno people don't. So we wanted to put a word out there to folks, hey, let's buckle up,
Click it or ticket.
This is a real easy thing to do, and it's kind of – it's for your benefit. So
we talked a little bit about it anymore. That might be a small town thing. You know, I'm just going to pop across the bridge and go
to
Foodland. Just going to
the store.
Just going to the store, so it's no big deal.
No.
But I think this was really important because because personal safety is part of being healthy as you age. And so doing all these safety related things
is
important.
And you may be the safest driver on the world, but look at all these other people out there and what's going on.
As my grandmother used to tell me, it's not you I'm worried about.
That's right. Right.
It's the other people.
Exactly. That's exactly
so,
right.
Yeah, protect
That's
yourself exactly for right. sure. Okay, right. cool. What else we got?
One more thing. We have between now and the time we talk to you next, we have a walk to the library that we're doing with Parks and Rec. And this time it's a walk to the University of Alaska Southeast Library.
Oh.
So this is a new one.
Okay.
This is an add-on. And so we'll start at the Back Loop Trailhead off Goat Hill. It's on Wednesday, June 17th. And we'll start at the trailhead at 10 o'clock and walk to the library, the University of Alaska Library, and have some snacks and look at some books and talk and visit and walk back to our cars at the trailhead.
Oh, that's very cool. So you're going sort of on that side. Yeah, you're going on the non-Egan's. That's really
Might
cool.
Might be downhill.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful walk for that.
So that's what we're doing.
And that is, what day is that again?
It's
Linda?
On June 17th. It's
June
17th. Wednesday.
Wednesday at 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m.
Okay.
Yep, at that Goat Hill Trailhead for the Back Loop.
And is that online somewhere if people find it?
It's on posters all around town, and it's online at Parks and Rec. And if you're on the Parks and Rec Facebook page, it's posted there. And I can send you a poster.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just want to make sure that people have a chance to see it or find it online somewhere. If you send me a poster, I can attach
Definitely.
It to the
Definitely, yeah. The poster has all of the four walks to the library, and so this is the
And
the
I have CBJ
June
on
one.
Tomorrow, so maybe they'll mention it again
There
tomorrow.
You go. They probably will.
The Parks and Recs are
Absolutely.
Coming
They'll mention it for sure.
And the other transportation-related thing that we've been working on, because the Juneau Commission on Aging has several priorities, housing, wellness and health, transportation. We've been working with the Capital Transit with regards to capital access, which is the service for seniors to be able to get to appointments, get to do some shopping, etc. And we know that there have been it's been a little bit clunky as a startup because they have a new contractor. And we've been working closely with the CBJ, who's really, really receptive to people calling Capital Transit and saying, this was my experience. Did this work? You know, if it worked well or if it didn't work well, call in and let them know, because they're trying to track that information now to ensure that those services are being made available to people as contracted.
Cool.
So,
that's great.
And you can find the contact for that on our website, Juneau Commission on Aging, at the bottom of the page. The top of the page is still focused on housing right now, because that continues to be another one of our priorities. And that page will list some of the kinds of things that you can do in your home to make it more age-friendly. And then if you pop down to the bottom of the page, you can look at some of the transportation information.
Yeah, you just put Juneau Commission on Aging in your favorite search engine, you'll find the page right away, and there's most everything we've talked about here and more is available there.
And much more, lots of resources on that page.
Just really quick before we have to go, I'm just curious, what are you all up to this summer, Deb? What are you going to be doing this summer?
You know, I love staying in Juneau during the summer.
Cool.
I think this is the greatest place to be because our trails are fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get music events. There's all kinds of fun things happening in Juneau. So I'm really fixated this summer on hiking as much as possible and staying as healthy as I possibly can.
So we'll see you on the trails.
You absolutely
Dr. Butner's advice, get moving. What about you, Linda?
Well, I like to stay in Juneau too, but I also like to go out every month and do a half marathon at least once a month. We just came back from Whitefish, Montana, where we did a half marathon last weekend, and the weekend before we did a half marathon in Idaho. And Sandpoint, Idaho. So 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing one down in Everett. We'll close out the month with Everett, Washington. and then in June, it's Anchorage. And so every month, at least once or twice, we go someplace and do a half marathon. And that's how I keep busy.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We'll see you in about a month or so.
Sounds great. We'll be back
Appreciate
in a month.
Thank you
so much, Boston.
You got it. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTO.
Yeah.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we talk with filmmaker Mariah Hayes about her new film, Dear Alaska. It's about Gen Z Tlingit shark siblings who uncover hidden family wounds and pave pathways of healing and lead celebrations of culture reclamation for their community. Plus, One Eye Open plays some Metallica this Saturday at Tracy's Crab Shack 2, which will be open this summer, and updates from the CBJ Parks and Recreation Department. We'll talk with all of them tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, which airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh, have a fantastic Thursday.